Now, there are two kinds of people in the world, only two kinds, not black and white, not rich and poor. There are those who are dead in sin, and there are those who are dead to sin.
After three nights of unbridled lawlessness across London, the contagion is spreading.
The problem is that God has already judged this. He has judged murder already. I don't need to question it. I don't need to ask and wonder what his plan is.
We're commanded as Christians not to participate in the works of darkness, but expose them.
The horror genre in film has been a favorite of those who long for the sensations they are given when watching supernatural characters haunt, hurt, maim, or even kill their accessible prey while they themselves remain in the safety of their home or favorite movie theater. But many people do not realize the out-of-body encounters and oppression that many of their favorite artists have gone through in order to transform their demons into platinum records. In fact, few realize that some of these artists even go to the painstaking effort of visiting haunted mansions and even living there to complete their melodic musings. One of the most prolific places used for creating these records is the Houdini Mansion on the outskirts of LA, used by the infamous Rick Rubin. In 1991, Rubin had already worked with overtly satanic acts such as The Cult, Slayer, and Danzig. But moving in the Red Hot Chili Peppers would prove to be the big break that they would need to go from the guys who wore tube socks around their privates into the musical phenomena they would become. But the paranormal phenomena that they would endure would freak out some of the members and excite others. Guitarist John Frusciante would go on to say, quote, "There are definitely ghosts in this house." And drummer Chad Smith refused to stay at the house, as lead singer Anthony Kiedis stated in his memoir Scar Tissue, quote, "We had heard that the property was haunted by a woman who was murdered there in the 30s, and that didn't sit well with him, so he opted to ride his motorcycle home each night." Frusciante claimed that he had even committed a sexual act with one of the ghosts, and the title of the album gives us insight into what could have led him to commit such an act, as their breakout album would be titled Blood, Sugar, Sex Magic. Magic using the infamous K at the end, similar to the sex magic of Satanist Aleister Crowley, who Frusciante, in a 2004 interview regarding his own album, stated that the wickedest man on the earth was the inspiration behind a number of his songs. Quote, "Emptiness, I'm Around, and 666 were all written while I was reading a biography about Aleister Crowley. Each of these three songs, in their own way, are the result of me thinking about him and his life." Interestingly enough, Red Hot Chili Peppers are not the only artists who claim to have gotten their break after using Crowley's sex magic, as Steven Tyler of Aerosmith said something similar. Quote, "I've practiced Crowley magic, so I know it works. I'm not saying that every girl I slept with at the same time, or that I asked her to pray for the same thing I was praying for, namely, that Aerosmith would become the greatest American band." While bands like Aerosmith and then the Red Hot Chili Peppers were known for many of their hits in the 70s and then the 80s and then the 90s, in the early 2000s, a more blatantly satanic band made its headway after the release of their self-titled album, Slipknot, and their hit song, Wait and Bleed. Slipknot would go on to produce platinum sales for both their self-titled record and their second album, Iowa, only to be at such odds with one another that they didn't know if they would come together to make another album. This was when they looked for some help in an outside source in none other than Rick Rubin and the spirits that haunted his Houdini mansion. Lead singer Corey Taylor went on to tell of the event that really set the tone for the rest of the album recording, as when he was showering, he saw a man fully dressed in a tuxedo walk past him, to the point it caused him to scream and run naked after the figure to see what it was running into his room. which was completely closed and locked to anyone. He found no one or no thing, and he didn't close another door for the rest of the recording. The late drummer of Slipknot and former frontman for the band Murder Dolls, Joey Jordison, went on to state regarding the Houdini Mansion, quote, "And what better place to make the new Slipknot record than an old abandoned mansion in the Hollywood Hills? A place where my door will open at 9 a.m. every morning, no matter what I put in front of it to stop it from happening." Taylor gave a little more detail when he said of the mansion, quote, "Oh, it's haunted. You can put the rumors to rest, because I've seen it and dealt with it for 6 months. I've got some stories that would raise the hair on the back of your neck, and that's no blank. That's not just for press. It's so weird, I don't even like talking about it. Me and Sean shared two adjacent rooms, and written on the phone jack box was, 'In case of paranormal activity, dial,' and it had a phone number, or 911. That's the level of insanity that we dealt with, but we loved that vibe. You can really feel it on the album. There were ghosts in the machine, in the equipment. Things would freeze, and things would loop for no reason at all. It was very strange, dude." While Rubin worked with a number of other artists in the mansion, Dave Grohl of Nirvana and the Foo Fighters dealt with his own paranormal experiences while recording the most recent Foo Fighters album, Medicine at Midnight. Quote, "When we first came to see the house, the vibe was definitely off. We knew that it was a bit creepy. You know, some people believe in ghosts, some people don't. Some people are receptive to bad vibrations, some people aren't. But when you walked into this place, it was undeniable that there were cold spots. You had that feeling in the back of your neck like someone was standing behind you or watching you. I lived in a house in Seattle that actually had a ghost in it. Things would move, you would hear footsteps, but the worst part was that when you were downstairs in the house, you always felt like someone was right blanking behind you. And at night, when you'd close your eyes, you felt like someone's face was right next to yours. That really blanked me up." Grohl would go on to explain some of the experiences while leaving others to the imagination. Quote, "Anyways, so when we walked into the house in Encino, I knew the vibes were definitely off, but the sound was blanking on. So, we started working there, and it wasn't long before things started happening. We would come back to the studio the next day, and all the guitars would be detuned, or the settings that we put on the board, all of them had gone back to zero. We would open up a Pro Tool session, and tracks would be missing. There were some tracks that were put on there that we didn't put on there, but just like weird open mic noises. So, nobody playing an instrument or anything like that, but just an open mic recording a room, and we'd be blanking zero in on those sounds within that. And we didn't hear any voices or anything really decipherable, but something was happening. It got to the point where I brought one of those Nest cams that I have at home for when my kids would sleep in their cribs. I would set it up overnight so that we could see if there was anyone there or anyone was coming to blank around with us. At first, nothing. And right around the time we thought we were ridiculous and we were out of our minds, we started to see things on the Nest cam that we couldn't explain. Then we found out of the history of the house, I had to sign a blanket non-disclosure agreement with the landlord because he's trying to sell the place. So I can't give away what happened there in the past, but these multiple occurrences over a short period of time made us finish the album as quickly as we could." Artists using demons or even sites of demonic activity has been going on for a number of years. Whether we talk about Jimmy Page of Led Zeppelin buying Aleister Crowley's former home on Loch Ness, or the fact that Robert Plant and Jimmy Page both went down to the crossroads of Highway 61 and 49 in Clarksdale, Mississippi, these places hold meaning to some of the biggest artists of all time. For the father of rock and roll, it proved to be life-altering.
Robert Johnson is considered the king of the Delta blues. He's also considered the father of rock and roll. It is very significant that Johnson would be considered the father of rock and roll, as it is alleged that he had sold his soul to Satan in Clarksdale, Mississippi, in exchange for guitar playing abilities and worldwide fame.
I went to the crossroads.
It was after Johnson made his alleged pact with Satan that he became the king of the Delta Blues. Blues master B.B. King said, quote, as a musician, Robert Johnson had it all.
I think he's the greatest folk blues guitar player that ever lived, and the greatest singer, the greatest writer.
You know, you think you're getting a handle on playing the blues, and then to hear Johnson, you're like, whoa, there's a long way to go yet.
Blues master and Johnson's mentor, Son House, said of him before Johnson's transformation, he'd sit at our feet and play during the break and such another racket you've never heard. Son House said he made the audiences mad with his racket. Son House went on to say of Johnson before he made his alleged pact with Satan that he was a talentless and even an irritating guitar player.
But he's followed me and Willie around on Saturday night, yeah, Willie Brown. And every time we stop for rest and sit there, we'll get out over in the corner or something and go out to catch air, you know, get the guitar and be trying to play it and be just noising the people, you know. And the folks would come out and say, why don't y'all, some of y'all go in there and meet that boy, put that, get that thing down, he's running us crazy. Finally, he run off from his father and mother. And he went over in Arkansas someplace. He was gone about 6 to 8 months.
It was during this period of 6 to 8 months that it is said that he made his pact with Satan on the crossroads of Highway 49 and 61 in Clarksdale, Mississippi. It was at these crossroads where the legendary experiences of Johnson trading in his eternal soul for temporary fame was said to have taken place in Clarksdale, Mississippi.
Well, they say he sold us after the devil, and that's what they say.
After Johnson's alleged pact with Satan, everything changed as Johnson went from being the worst blues guitarist in a matter of months to the best. Some musicians who knew Johnson claimed that Johnson himself admitted that he sold his soul to Satan.
He said he done that with the crossroads.
Son House said that when Johnson returned after 6 to 8 months, everything changed as Johnson was transformed almost before their very eyes.
And he come back. And when he come back, me and Willie Brown was playing out to him, and he walked in. He said, can I hear the look of him? I said, nah, don't come back with that, Robert. I said, you know the people don't want to hear that racket. He said, let them say what they want to say. I want you to see what I like.
Son House said when he finished, all of our mouths were standing open. They couldn't believe what they were hearing. Son House declared emphatically, quote, he sold his soul to the devil to play like that.
Robert Johnson would not only be known as the father of rock and roll, but really the founding member of the 27 Club, a club that has taken the life of a number of famous artists at the age of 27. From Brian Jones of the Rolling Stones, Jimi Hendrix, Janis Joplin, Jim Morrison, and Kurt Cobain, all of these artists passed away at the age of 27. We will now look at two different members of the 27 Club who also dealt with the torment of demonic possession, starting with Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix, who claimed to be a voodoo child, stated, quote, things like witchcraft, which is a form of exploration and imagination that have been banned by the establishment and called evil, is because people are frightened to find out the full power of the mind. The satanic powers Hendrix unleashed through his music, though, were absolutely destructive. Jimi Hendrix opened himself up to demonic beings who used him to initiate the hippie youth into the counterculture revolution. Alan Douglas, the executive curator of Hendrix's musical estate, admitted his spirit possession.
Now, one of the biggest things about Jimi was what he believed, and he believed that he was possessed by some spirit, and I got to believe it myself, and that's what we had to deal with all the time. And he was very humble about discussing it with people because he didn't want people to feel like he was being pretentious and so on, but he really believed it, and he was wrestling with it constantly.
Jimi Hendrix's live-in girlfriend, Fane Pridgen, also spoke of Hendrix's admission to being demon-possessed and related his demon possession to the reception of his music.
He used to always talk about some devil or something was in him, you know, and he didn't have any control over it. He didn't know what made him act the way he acted and what made him say the things he said and songs and different things like that just come out of him, you know. But at first I used to think it was a cop-out when he had really done me in, right? And he'd say, I don't know what come over me, you know. I really can't understand it. And, you know, he used to just, you know, grab his hair or something or pull his hand or stand in the mirror or cry or something. Oh, Lord. It was so sad when he would cry. He was, maybe he was the first man maybe the only man that I've ever seen cry, you know, but it just killed me when he cried because he felt like, it seems like to me he was so tormented and just torn apart and like he really was obsessed, you know, with something really evil, you know. And he said, you know, like you're from Georgia, you know, he said, I should know how, you know, people drive demons. He actually thought about, you know, if we ever go, because I used to talk about my grandmother and all her weird stuff, you know, and he used to talk about us going down there and having some root lady or somebody see if she could drive this demon out of him.
But Jimmy isn't the only member of the 27 Club who came into contact with demons he couldn't get out. As the Doors frontman, Jim Morrison, spoke of something similar.
In Morrison's song, The Soft Parade, he reiterates the theme of selling one's soul to Satan for power and fame. Quote, you gotta slay a few animals at the crossroads. For Jim Morrison, the crossroads would be UCLA and Venice Beach. After bombing on the finals at UCLA on film, Morrison went down to Venice Beach to live. It was there that Satan would offer him fame and power and fortune as a rock star if Morrison would do his bidding. It was there at Venice Beach as Jim lived on the roof of an old abandoned building that Satan communicated music to Jim Morrison, who couldn't even sing at the time, through visions. It was here that Jim Morrison opened his heart up to Satan's vision. Jim Morrison admitted of this experience. In that year, there was an intense visitation of energy. He said, I left school and went down to the beach to live. I slept on a roof. I met the spirit of music. Who was that spirit? He said, an appearance of the devil on a Venice canal. Running, I saw Satan.
Another follower of Aleister Crowley, who recently quipped that it was his worship of Satan that kept him clear of COVID-19 when his daughter and wife got it, sang a song titled Crowley, and even gave a book on witchcraft that led his bandmate, Geezer Butler, into being haunted, and apparently helped to bring about the song and the band title, Black Sabbath.
Geezer Butler of Black Sabbath, one of rock's most popular bands from the late 60s to the turn of the century, admitted, I was putting upside down crosses on my wall and pictures of Satan all over. I painted my apartment black. I was getting really involved in it, and all these horrible things started happening to me. Butler states, there was a weekly magazine called Man, Myth, and Magic that I started reading, which was all about Satan. That and books by Aleister Crowley. Black Sabbath's reunion album liner notes state, quote, Black Sabbath was launched in the U.S. with a party in San Francisco with the head of the Church of Satan, Anton LaVey, presiding over proceedings. All of a sudden, Sabbath were Satan's right-hand men. Black Sabbath became one of hundreds of bands recruiting millions of young people to Satan, reported even to go as far to give altar calls to receive Satan as Lord. Black Sabbath was named after a satanic being that appeared to bass player Geezer Butler after he had already painted his house black and adorned it with upside-down crosses and depictions of Satan. This satanic being that appeared at the foot of Butler's bed is considered the fifth mystical member of Black Sabbath, who gave them the material for their first three albums. Ozzy Osbourne has admitted that he thinks that he is a vehicle being used by Satan, declaring, I don't know if I'm a medium for some outside source. Whatever it is, frankly, I hope it's not what I think. Satan.
I was getting into, not practicing, but reading a lot of spiritualism and black magic and white magic and all that kind of stuff, which, you know, a lot of people were doing at the time, which is like the post-hippie generation kind of thing. So all the peace and love is going out the window. And spiritualism and meditation, all that was coming in. So I was interested in that. And somebody gave Ozzy this old 16th century book of black magic, and it was all written in, I think it was Latin. And he brought it round to my flat because he knew that I was interested in books and magic and all that kind of thing. And I just got this really weird vibe off it. And I put it in this cupboard in the apartment that I was living in. And that night, I just like woke up suddenly, and there was just like this black shape at the bottom of my bed, and it just seemed, it just vanished into thin air as I was staring at it. And this, I just had the thought, it's got to have something to do with this book that Ozzy brought round for me, and I like leapt out of bed, rushed to the cupboard to throw this book out, and the book was gone. And the next day, I told Ozzy about it, and about 3 days after that, we came up with our first song, Black Sabbath, and Ozzy just like related to my experience in the lyric.
While there are plenty of modern-day artists who have been clear about their demonic possession and or allegiance to Satanist Aleister Crowley, the fact is that many do not realize just how real these demons are.
While many of these artists may seem quite coy concerning some of their experiences, we're going to look at eyewitness testimony of multiple accounts, which takes us to the eastern shore of the Sea of Galilee, where we find that there was a man there, attested to by multiple eyewitnesses, who had supernatural strength to the point that no man could subdue him. Nobody could hold him down. In fact, they would even put this man in iron shackles, and the supernatural strength that he had from the demons that were living inside of him would actually break free of the shackles. And this man would go about the tombs and go about the mountains screaming and wailing, and no one could stop him from his own self-destruction. And this very man would begin doing exactly what so many young kids, so many people are doing modernly. What we would call self-harm or cutting today is exactly what he was engaged in when he was demonically possessed. You see, the same demons that were around in ancient Israel almost 2,000 years ago are the same ones today that are influencing young people and artists into cutting and harming themselves. But there was one experienced exorcist, one who had seen this sort of thing, and this one exorcist by which the demons tremble at his sight, who tells us what happens and what takes place when somebody has a demon inside of him, and then that demon leaves. You see, he says that when a demon goes inside of a person and then he leaves, that man may clean himself up. He may get clean inside of him, and that demon goes and finds no place to rest. So when he finds no place to rest, comes back and sees that man, sees he's fully kept and everything is nice and clean, he says, you know what? I'm going to go find seven more demons more wicked than myself, and then we're going to go inside of that man. And the place or the state in which that person is in is worse than it was before with just the one demon. You see, this very man who tells us that, the very exorcist who warns us that this is what would happen to those who remove a demon and yet do not fill themselves to what they were designed to be filled with. And this very man is the one who subdued the demoniac. This very man is the one who, when he came to the shore, he made the demons inside that demoniac tremble. Seeing Jesus from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him. And shouting with a loud voice, he said, "What business do we have with each other, Jesus, Son of the Most High God? I implore you, by God, do not torment me." For he had been saying to him, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he was asking him, "What is your name?" And he said to him, "My name is Legion, for we are many." And he began to implore him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. The demons implored him, saying, "Send us into the swine so that we may enter them." Jesus gave them permission. And coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. Their herdsmen ran away and reported it to the city and in the country, and the people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Jesus and observed the man who had been demon-possessed, sitting down, clothed, and in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. Those who had seen it described to them how it happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine, and they began to implore him to leave their region. You see, this very demon, this legion of demons that ended up killing a number of swine, this very same demon trembled at the very sight of Jesus Christ. And the fact is that when these people saw the very man, the demoniac who was haunting their region, the demoniac who would scream and wail, the demoniac who would break the shackles, the demoniac who would cut himself, the demoniac who couldn't be subdued, when they saw him clothed, no longer naked, now in his right mind, what was their reaction? Their reaction was to be frightened. And what were they worried about when they saw Jesus, the very ones by which the demons then trembled? Their reaction was, "Hey, you, get out of here." Now I have to ask you, you guys have been watching these artists admit to the fact that they invite demons. You've been watching these artists admit that they themselves go to haunted areas in order to bring inspiration for their music. And you have to ask yourself, where is that inspiration coming from? The fact is that the Bible is the only source where we find that we have a true account of the spiritual reality that we live in. And it's the only one that gives the answer. You see, these demons that are now here haunting, and these demons that are now here as familiar spirits that may come to someone and tell them they're a distant relative or something, these familiar spirits, these unclean spirits, these demons are coming and haunting. And guess what? The Bible tells us quite clearly that you are of one dominion. You are either in the dominion of darkness or in the dominion of Jesus Christ, his marvelous Son. And so what you need to ask is, what did Jesus come for? The reality is, I don't need to ask you, have you ever told a lie? I just ask you, how many lies have you told? The reality is, I probably don't have to ask you if you ever stole anything, and I wouldn't trust you if you told me you hadn't, because you would have to admit you're a liar. And the reality is that if I asked you, have you ever put anything in front of knowing and loving God, you would have to admit that you have. And therefore, you are what the Bible calls and what Jesus calls a lawbreaker. And the Bible warns quite clearly that everybody who sins will die. The soul that sins shall die. And so here is where we are today. The reality is the demons tremble when they see Jesus. And I want to ask, do you tremble? And you should. You should tremble at the thought of Jesus Christ coming back and you not being right with him. Because you have broken the laws that God has given you. He's given you a conscience that bears witness against you, and you still broke the laws. He sent out his Holy Spirit to convict you concerning sin, righteousness, and judgment, and you still broke the law. He wrote his law on your heart, and you still broke the law. And this is what you have. This is the situation that you are in today. That if you stood before God, if you died today, he would have to look at you. He would have to ask you quite clearly, why should you get into heaven and why shouldn't you be judged for your sin? And if you came and said, well, I've done all these good things, I've been such a good person. The fact is that you're comparing yourself to other people. You're not comparing yourself to the cross. You're comparing yourself to the curve. And that's not what God judges off of. He says perfection and perfection alone. No speck of any sort of wickedness is getting into heaven. So here's your choice. You can do what they did and say, Jesus, leave. Get away from us. We see what you've done, and I don't want anything to do with it. Or you can say, I recognize that I'm a sinner. I recognize the laws that I've broken, and I've recognized because I have broken those laws, your son Jesus came to die on a cross to pay for the sins that I committed, to pay for the fine for the laws that I broke. And when you look to him, repent. That means have a change of heart, which leads to a change of action. Repent and place your trust not in yourself and your good works, but place your trust in Jesus Christ and him alone. Then you shall be saved. If you believe in your heart and confess with your mouth Jesus as Lord and believe that God raised him from the dead, you shall be saved, because all who call on the name of the Lord shall be saved, shall be delivered. Do you want to be delivered from all of the wickedness in this world? Do you want to leave the dominion of darkness and be transformed into the dominion of light, his marvelous Son? Then what you need to do right now is repent and turn to Jesus. Place your full trust in him. Jesus paid it all on the cross. He said these words concerning your fine and your payment that is due your name. This word, this beautiful word, tetelestai, it means paid in full, or it is finished. It was an accounting term that they would stamp on somebody who had a debt. And when that debt was paid, they would stamp tetelestai, paid in full. When Jesus was on that cross, your sins were paid in full. But now you have the choice. Are you going to turn and say, leave me, Jesus, and he will leave you to your own accord and you will get the exact judgment that you deserve? Or will you say, love me, Jesus, I want to know you. Turn to him right now before it's too late, before this world gets any crazier than it already is, and place your full and complete trust in him. God bless you guys.
The 5:11 News with Chad Davidson has been brought to you by Good Fight Ministries, bringing you news and commentary from a Christian perspective. This show can be heard every Friday wherever podcast shows are available, or visit 511news.org. Thank you for joining us, and we look forward to being with you next week on the 5:11 News.